it's a discussion amongst all of us, so which is kind of continuing the discussion from upstairs. And the main question is, why are we here?
Like, from a sort of theory perspective, yeah. Like, why are these models interesting? Like, what are we, what can we get out of thinking about dark matter and the early structures? Like, what's exciting from a theory point of view, I guess?
And yeah, why have we all just started writing papers about this stuff?
Anybody?
Yeah. Like, I'm partly curious what the rest of you think about this motivation from sort of changing models of PSM physics, because I think that's a pretty good motivation, but it's not clear. I mean, the last talk was great in the details, but it's also not obvious yet that there's such a natural connection between the things that we think are sort of most novel or produce interesting signatures at the level of this bit of physics and what actually is going to, you know, like, solve the hierarchy problem. So I'm actually just curious what people think about where we are in that space of things. So I'm just going to throw the question right back out.
Can I be argumentative?
Please.
Since we already talked about this, I feel deeply uncomfortable to talk about the framework of a theory of dark matter doing cool things without, I mean, the one thing that we know, which is there is dark matter, and having a story for where that came from. And I accept, I wonder, is this something where at some point that information comes in? Why doesn't that come in now? Why is that, mm-hmm. now that we're building these models, why is that not the number one thing we want to do to put spots on our plots?
Well, I guess, you know, what is good? What is the number one thing you want to do, right? Because the number one thing you want to do is come up with a model that, like, you know, looks good and kind of, like, finds mass, and then we ask what it does for dark matter. Because the number one thing we want to do, you know, explore the vast space of dark matter models that haven't been explored to try to understand where is the data going to come from that we're missing, you know, is the one thing we want to do to explain the. I'm not sure, and I guess for me, the one thing I want to do is try to figure out where is the best new data going to come from. But I agree with you.
I think maybe the best thing that we can hope to do right now is basically the plot, Sarah, that you showed with constraints on a dark matter cooling function. And the reason I say that as an example is that if you think about, this is one of my favorite things to say in talks, but what we know about dark matter is, you know, has all come without knowing anything about specific models, right? And a lot of the models people wrote down were in some sense premature. But we do have real constraints on dark matter that are completely model independent. And I would argue that what we can do with new data is come up with new observables that provide us with new, completely model independent features. Cooling curves are an example of a thing I would not have thought of as part of our description of what dark matter must satisfy. Right? Okay, we know it has to be cold, right? But can we now say, oh, we know it has to have a cooling curve that does this funny thing? That's a new generic feature that we didn't have before that becomes input to model building without having to have any spots and plots, much as I like to break.
I guess the question for you, Flip, is would you be happy if someone told you, here's dark matter, but I cannot exactly read Lagrangian? The answer is probably not, right?
Yeah, I think deep in my heart I'd be unhappy.
Yeah. Well, there's Mond, right? So let's not.
Do they even say Mond, or should I be banned from
that? Like, is it enough to get properties about dark matter? Do you specifically need Lagrangian?
That dark matter is here is something that we observe. So I think, coming from, like, the particle physics LHC perspective, like, there's this thing that we know, and yes, we want to be general. Are there parts of our plots that are just obviously unphysical, or is there something interesting about we're not committing to a relic abundance or some dark matter production mechanism because we expect all of this to be accessible? I think that's something which I that's a more meaningful question, that is there a cleverness that I hadn't appreciated would give all of this?
Well, I guess the flip side of that is how confident are you that there are models that we can write down that make sense in terms of constraints and particle physics that are unproducible by anything a clever theorist can think of? Mm. And that's where I don't see any of you telling me that's unproducible by any known physics coupled with, I mean, and so then why is that the question I should be answered today? And maybe there's a really good answer to that, which I would love to know, but I don't.
Yeah, maybe that's the question. What I should have asked you a few hours ago was, is it obvious that all of these areas in the curve on the plot are accessible? That it is plausible that a clever Lagrangian builder would say, yeah, no problem, we can do that. It's not worth writing it down because we know we can do that.
The only obstruction that I know of, and I don't know how seriously I should take this obstruction. And to some extent, that's why I was interested in the previous talk about what are the range of temperatures that you can get, is just how asymmetric can reheating be. Maybe that's a good avenue to take. So I think a long time ago, Jesse Shelton and Peter Edson, some people, you know, did this, you know, if I only have gravitational interactions, I believe the inflation story, post-inflation, whatever, what's the maximum asymmetry I can get? You know, that still presupposes that I understand a lot of theory of the early universe that maybe I don't, but if you take that as a baseline assumption, you can ask how asymmetric, and that's maybe a constraint that I would believe. Beyond that, I don't know. What are other
things? But I think there is some motivation that comes from the fact that, like, I believe I could torture inflation enough to just make it give me anything I want. And we've done that a lot over the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And now we're at this point where there is, well, we haven't found a dark matter particle, but there's a lot of new data in a space that we haven't really thought about before. And building from the bottom up kind of worked for the standard model if you go back 100 years, right, where we look at phenomena and we try to explain what doesn't fit exactly. And no one, you know, the Heisenberg weren't looking for a unique.
To say the same thing in a little slightly dumber language is that Lagrangians have a huge amount of freedom, and that ultimately there's two ways we can go about this. We can say, here's an idea, let's see if I can make a Lagrangian and see if it survives everything else. Or I can omit that triangular trajectory, and I can just say, here are the bulk, you know, the IR features of what I've come up with. Are those IR features compatible with what else I know? Maybe we're in a regime right now where that's more efficient because we don't have ways of constraining the UV as effectively.
Yeah, I don't think we should be forgetting that UV physics has to be there. So there are models that you could write down that clearly just don't work.
There are models that are obviously wrong, but I'd argue that even those models, usually you know it's wrong, not because you have some deep insight from having played with Lagrangians, but because there's some IR feature that you already know is incompatible with observations. Like, I actually struggle to think of a case where I know that something can't happen in the IR because of something I learned from the UV. Like, okay, there are some, you know, maybe cherry-picked examples, but like, I don't know. This discussion. Who has an idea? What's something that I obviously shouldn't do because of a UV thing that I definitely can't do this in the IR?
Is Lorentz invariance?
Let's allow it. Let's say it's a UV thing, and then there are people who write papers about Lorentz invariance violation.
Does make me uncomfortable.
Sure, but observationally, right? What they write down is. I don't want to say the Lagrangians they write down are okay, but what they write down is this observation of mix.
It's a lot of guiding principles that guide us, right?
Yeah.
To what degree do you appear by them? To what degree do you decide, okay, this is part of this mantra that was preached upon us, or maybe not generations, because, you know, physics changes so often. That it's not building a new generation, but everyone, my main sort of message here in a roundabout way is we really have to keep an open eye, because as much as, you know, our predecessors, and this is a very short time span, right, have been right, they all have been wrong. All of them, really, they all have been wrong. So truly, and to go back, are we at a moment of crisis or not? I don't know, I get the feeling we kind of are based on the public lecture talk, right? So are we or are we not in a moment of crisis in particle dark matter? Is it theory? Is it experiment? I don't know. I'm just tossing questions out here. But again, my main takeaway is, yes, we all have the tools. We all learn the tools. But at the end of the day, those are just tools that are tools to means, immediate means. But are they really part of the solution? I don't know. And I'm afraid to say I'm afraid that they're not. Really part of the final solution, if there is such a thing. Yeah. But go back to the question for us, are we at a moment of crisis in this idea of finding dark matter via direct detection? We are in direct detection. Why are we here? So we can get some information.
Or have we already just calculated the obvious things and looking for more things to calculate? stay
possible,
on.
Right?
Say that out loud. You're not supposed to say that out loud.
No.
I mean, I think we're at a moment where we need a lot of creativity and to like branch out in terms of the way we're looking for dark matter, right? Because we did the obvious things and they didn't work out, right? And so part of it is that there might be some really interesting signatures in unexpected places, and that's kind of what we're all sort of talking about, I guess, here. But also from an astrophysicist's point of view, like there's a whole lot of new data coming. Learning about the early universe, learning about reionization, early galaxies, and so on. And if there's some physics in there that we're not including, we're gonna get it wrong, right? And there's a huge parameter space for dark matter to do really interesting things, especially to early structures. And like I think it's important to explore that parameter space so that we know what kinds of error bars we need to put on our astrophysical, inferences, as well as hopefully learning something about fundamental physics of dark matter.
I mean, I'll say that probably all of us here would consider ourselves theorists, so we all think there's more theory needed. But I do agree that I think like the looking for new angles, it's a profitable way to go. And we have this new lamppost, right? Like whenever there's a new lamppost, you should look beneath it.
Yeah.
And it might be that there's nothing, but at the very least, you've parsed that part. And I think the name of the game now is error bars, which you said is. New things pop up, we don't understand them. How well can we model these things? And this is to some extent theory limited. Like more data helps you, but you need interpretation. There's already a lot of observers say, not that many people doing careful analysis.
Yeah, especially where things get messy, right? Where you have to deal with baryons, and you have to deal with cooling and, levels of the hydrogen atom and all of that kind of stuff that's complicated and annoying, but like it's real and we have to account for that.
I think it would be great. I agree with the previous idea that if we can find more perspectives to find model independent features of dark matter, that would help us a lot with model building, so we're not aimlessly writing down Lagrangians.
Maybe the synthesis of these perspectives is that there is a very necessary place for that kind of detailed model building. Maybe it comes after we have some kind of model independent signature, right? Because what do you do when you find a signature? What do you do when you see evidence of dark matter capture in a star? What do you do when you see evidence of dark matter cooling on some scale? Then you have something new to play with, but it's so unconstrained, you have to go and start writing down UV models to get some inspiration for where else you could look.
But actually, I want to push back, because I think you do need also the theory input. It's like, why would you have known to look at SIDM if someone hadn't told you this is a general feature? Like, there's a dialogue that I think we need to get better at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are features that come up in models versus things I can see. And as someone who works in the things you can see territory, I really appreciate the dialogue of, like, these are things that are interesting to me. And maybe some of them are invisible, but some of them, again, I wouldn't have necessarily thought of SIDM if you don't know GFT, right?
Right. Yeah, we were having an interesting discussion earlier, some of us, about some pros of super radiance. And how would you know to think about super radiance without, first of all, a whole lot of black hole theory, but also a whole lot of, string compactifications that, give you these light outs.
But to me, those are motivations at the end of the day.
Yeah, I agree.
I push further. I mean, so again, this is coming from like the LHC kind of background, where why do we have all these simplified models or effective blah, blah, blah? Because then you can compare one type of analysis to another type of analysis. And so motivation is great. But that's the one I'm happy to throw that out the window with Sarah. Okay, motivation. Let's look for phenomena. But as Katie's pointing out, that there are different, very different types of phenomena I'm coming to appreciate from this conference. Is there a better language than here's a Lagrangian to say, if I want to have this happening in the early universe, this other thing can now happen. And I don't know how to do that other than Lagrangians. But if there's a better way, then this is the right group to figure that out.
So yeah, the problem I have with just writing down Lagrangians and going for it is that, your parameter space is ridiculously large. You can focus on a small window and say, hey, there are these really, really cool observables here. Let's go look for them. But we don't have a measure of what we should be looking at. And just going and choosing a model and doing some calculations that's fun and all, and you get some cool phenomenology that you can go you know, tell some experimentalists to build, spend, you know, 20 years of their life looking for that thing. But have we really done the world a service? was this the right thing to do?
Right.
The model lets you connect different observables, if you already know the observables. And now we kind of want the universe.
So EFTs are an example of this working well. Right? There's been a large set of programs in the dark matter world. You know, here I have some set of experiments, and you know, there's some very, very broad class of models where the right things to the right parameter space is this, you know, Wilson coefficient space. And maybe there's a question of whether there's something we can do like that, which goes beyond the cases where an EFT can be easily. Well, the answer to that is
you can still go wrong there. Like if you look at non-relativistic effective operators, there are some that just can't be produced to leading order from a relativistic EFT. Do I still care about that? Do I still look for those and say, well, maybe I'm just not clever enough to come up with a theory, but it's worth seeing what the fundamental is.
And that's the best response to the question I asked before about, you know, what can the UV really tell me about what I can't do in the IR? That's an example where the UV tells me quite strictly, I really shouldn't look for this operator.
It costs you nothing to search. If it costs you nothing
if
to
search. No, okay. I'm all about inexpensive searches. My favorite thing to do.
Is there a lesson from Mond here? I mean, I don't know. Someone here probably knows the story better than I do. But I know Heibel makes a big deal about how SIDM drew a lot of inspiration for phenomenology from Mond. And Mond had these phenomenological explanations for different, you know, whatever these relations are. And it gave targets for something like SIDM where you weren't modifying gravity, but you were modifying air distributions in Halo. And that's something where the thing that was connecting you wasn't a Lagrangian, but it was connecting different types of observables that you ordinarily wouldn't if you were just coming from the Lagrangian perspective.
Should we just go and build giant covariance matrices? See what correlates with what.
Right. It's almost making the thing argue that night in both choices because theorists had the liberty, you know, in the past because there's not too many constraints to build so many models. And I wish I had that slide, which some of you might know, Profumo's textbook, which summarizes the variety of dark matter models. It's scary. That's why I didn't put it. It's insane. It's just spaghetti. Bam, 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 blah, blah, blah. Like a hydra. It is like a hydra. So are we trying to chop this hydra's heads? And lo and behold, there's going to be another head, another organism that's appearing. I don't know. Like, this feels to me, it feels a little like disorganized, to say the least, right? So I really don't know. I don't have an answer, but it feels a little bit like the effort is somewhat disorganized, and I'm not sort of shifting blames for right now. Yes, there was freedom before to have a lot of theories. What do we do now? Which model do we first select? Okay, let's figure this out, because they cannot, or maybe they can be part of a solution. Maybe you don't need one unique dark matter model. You know, we are trying to think, it's either cold dark matter or it's either axions, but maybe we should think about this puzzle as having more than one unique solution. I don't know. Again, I'm tossing questions out to you, but the feeling of panic I had when I first saw that freaking slide, it almost made, okay, this book is too much for me, which is not, but those of you that open that book know what I mean, right?
I mean, it's gotten worse.
Right? since it was first published.
Yeah, the amount of freedom we realize we have has only increased.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, before it was, you know, it's going to be a neutralino or an axion.
Right. Yep.
That's it.
Right. And Pandora's box is really
going to find the LHC, and when it turns on in 2011, something explodes.
We haven't even talked about the fact that we've had primordial black holes also discussed today. Mm-hmm. That's been a not just a hydra, but it's been a phoenix. I actually wonder, you know, are we going to have success in killing off that whole class of models at some point? Is there some,
mm-hmm.
you know, there at least it seemed people thought it was dead. You know, people think it's alive. In 5 years, will we be able to confidently say no one should care about PBHs as dark matter? A spicy question for the room.
One thing you can convince some theorists to give up their theories, right? I think there's always going to be a crowd for every model.
Well, I think you can rule out certain. I mean, you can always rule out a single mass KBH across almost the entire mass range, and we'll probably get it across the entire mass range somehow, but you're never going to be able to rule out just trace under the constraint curve until you get a mouse function that fits, right? Like that's, I don't know how you ever get rid of something like that.
I mean, I think from my side, the issue right now is the asteroid mass window, right? That's
that's interesting.
If we can close that, I'd be happy to just move on. Me personally.
That's what's left, right?
Yeah,
I think I'd also argue that maybe the freedom with extended mass functions is, you know, where you start, you know, drawing lines under the curve is maybe exaggerated in the sense that it really is hard. I mean, even if, because you can't quite just draw under the curve, like it's a little
you
more.
You have
subtle.
To be a little.
And like, I think if you can get, you know, a couple orders of magnitude down everywhere in the single mass regime, you probably have basically ruled out extended mass functions as well.
This is like a phoenix, but it sounds like it's more restrictive than just like writing up random Lagrangians, and you have some
right.
Right.
No, right. So with this set of mass functions, it's actually a full function's worth of freedom. It literally is an infinite dimensional parameter space.
Well, yeah, but like you have sort of like a more localized place to like you have one thing.
Yeah.
Well, you can say that Lagrangian would be like out of zero versus out of zero.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right?
But I think that there is a point where you still can basically kill even the craziest wiggle you can draw. And at that point, you have to just dispute the observables to say that you still believe they're more.
But hold on, when we're talking about this, aren't we really saying you ruled out that this mass of primordial black hole makes up the abundance of dark matter that we observe?
Yes.
Isn't this a thing that we're trying to let go of? In terms of like looking for pheno, in terms of like are we connecting observables? Like going back to like the bigger picture philosophy.
Say again?
So you know, my first push to Sarah was, why don't we make a big deal about the abundance of dark matter? Shouldn't we be constraining all of our ideas? Now we're talking about primordial black holes. And the thing that we're saying doesn't work is, well, at this mass, you cannot produce all of the dark.
No, it's not production. It's usually a question of, you know, the observable in some way scales with the amount of dark matter in primordial black holes.
Ah, okay.
So you agnostic to production mechanism, you restrict
okay.
how much you have.
So this is qualitatively a different statement.
Yes. In fact, if you loop in production mechanism, then you say, oh, I know what general form the mass distribution should have, and I can make much more restrictive statements.
So at what point, if you like have some constraint that like in this mass range, the primordial black holes have to be less than 1% of the dark matter, you know, you can still have 1%, right? So, I mean, you know, do you say, okay, that's interesting, you can work on that, but you're not really making progress on the question of like what the dark matter is anymore? Or, you know, how do you navigate that? Is it 5%? Is it 50%?
That's like saying we should be looking for modifications to GR, even if they don't explain rotation curves, what we call them.
Or a spicier question, what happens if you rule out a QCD axiom? Do you still believe it now? It's interesting.
That's just a function of the theorist that happens to be working with.
So it seems like if you're going to talk about atomic dark matter at all, you should at least allow for, you know, 1% extra stuff. And if you're going to have more than one thing you add, you know, why do all those things have to be part of the same dark sector?
Right. And the standard model sector has got all sorts of weird things.
So it's interesting actually to turn it around and say, you know, suppose you just wanted to detect primordial black holes without explaining anything about dark matter. How would you go look for them, regardless of, you know, which constraints could you beat down further? Just like, you know.
And that's pretty much what we do. Say, well, you go and look for microlensing signatures, and say that sets a limit on how many of these things are out there, and the fraction of dark matter is a convenient unit to use.
If you find that it's 1%, that'll be very, very handy. I have a question for Sarah, maybe along these lines. We've been talking about atomic dark matter and dark chemistry. To what extent have people been thinking about dark nuclear processes?
Yeah, well, this is really coming back to polymer.
Yeah.
Right? That is the one place where people have looked at, I guess, you know, neutron star equations.
We are thinking about mirror stars.
I guess that just opens up a whole bunch of other phenomenology, right? You have dark supernovae, you have dark ray genesis, you can have dark R process. Dark matters.
Yeah.
Dark matter.
Searches would then still be helpful in that stuff because you say some fraction of material in the universe is now in compact structures made from like our mirror sector or atomic matter. And then all the tools that are set up to look for not just look that hole still apply to that.
Okay. Yeah, really interesting question there. You know, even when we use just atomic dark matter, once you move away from the standard model, it's not obvious how it's changes, and even more so with your food, you can open a giant can of worms, but it could be that there are many parts of that parameter space that just don't do that many interesting things. And then it would be really interesting to try to think more carefully about how big is that box actually in terms of what type of thing.
From the outside, it looks like a big box. There's a lot of.
No.
Well, okay, so the obvious one is, do you always get super? If you don't, your life is
wasted. On the other hand, if you do, then you can put a finite lifetime on these objects and maybe evade microlensing searches. What would the universe look like if most of the dark matter had at one point been part of a dark star?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Maybe you'd screw up kinematics. Maybe you just like have late time warm dark matter. You're just blowing out dark matter from supernova.
Something to play with. Distribution. Something like that. Too. And those are things you can look for.
Yeah, good. So maybe this comes back to the question of what new observational handles we have. Anything that you could learn from the first stars about the dark matter distribution that could be polluted by these kinds of effects.
Which I think perfectly answers our question. Why are we here?